Welcome to Coastal Cafe. I'm Marianne Wagner, your host today. Coastal Cafe is a joint production of Washington Sea Grant at the University of Washington College of the Environment and KPTZ 91.9 FM. We have with us today Captain Eric von Brandenfels with the Puget Sound Pilots. Captain von Brandenfels has been a licensed maritime pilot on Puget Sound since 1995. As a member of the Puget Sound Pilots, he has been responsible for moving some of the largest ships in the world through our waters and safely to the dock. Eric has also served on the board of directors since 2006, and most recently as president of the pilots, ending in 2021. Eric is a lifelong resident of the Puget Sound region and is also very active in representing pilots with the environmental community. He has served on the board of Puget Sound Keepers and has been active with various projects of the Puget Sound Restoration Fund. So welcome, Eric.
Thank you. Nice to be here. Appreciate you inviting me in on this.
Well, tell us about the purpose of the Puget Sound Pilots and what exactly the pilots do.
The Puget Sound Pilots, we mitigate the threat that the large vessels that come into Puget Sound pose to the marine environment and the infrastructure and the people of the state of Washington that recreate on the sound and on the shoreline in Puget Sound. We mitigate the threat that those large ships pose to those entities.
How did it all get started? Are the pilots a branch of the state of Washington or an independent entity?
You know, it was actually, you go all the way back to the first Congress when the states, those were the East Coast states in the first Congress, that the federal government gave the states the right to make sure that their waters were protected in whatever measures they'd like. And that included the allowance of having a form groups of pilots that the state laws supported in the requirement of needing to have state pilotage endorsed captains on the vessels that came into their waters to mitigate the threats that those vessels posed, because you didn't want to have a ship come in. And still to this day, those same factors apply. You didn't want to have a ship come in, do damage to the port or the infrastructure or the environment of the waterways, and then just be able to leave. So the best way to do that was to have a neutral party whose interests were, an independent party whose interests were solely on behalf of the people of the state that the vessel was plying the waters of. So, and it's done all around the world. The ships, it's unknown generally, but ships, captains, they're really good about getting across the ocean and managing the vessels and being very aware of the weather and the cargo and the ship's crew and all the things that are necessary for that. But when it comes down to handling the ship in close quarter situations and avoiding the threats that those close quarter situations pose, it's actually mariners like pilots that do that on a regular basis every day. The in and out, the close quarters work, the close quarter ship handling, they're aware of what threats, you know, the shoals and the places that the ship needs to avoid, also handling them with the tugs and things like that, and what tug capabilities there are. And with a constant, you know, the ability to assess what dangers there are on a regular basis, give them the most up-to-date expertise. So we're the local knowledge that really makes sure that nothing happens. And captains, they hand over the conduct of the vessel to the pilots very willingly. And so it's they're very, they get very uneasy when they get close to the shoreline. And that's where we as pilots, you know, that's where we're the most comfortable. So it's a symbiotic relationship, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, it's that local knowledge you're talking about that's key and is of such value to these captains coming into our waters, it sounds like. So Puget Sound pilot members are specially trained ship captains. How do they pilot the ships, actually? How does that happen?
That's pretty interesting. We actually climb up on the ships. You know, they come into Puget Sound. They come in through the Straits of Juan de Fuca, and then they come. There's only a couple course changes they need to make to get to Port Angeles, which is about 60 miles from the entrance to the Straits of Juan de Fuca. That is done through the oversight of the Coast Guard vessel traffic system, where they're on radar and they're monitored. When they get to the pilot station in Port Angeles, we go out on a 70-foot pilot boat. We come alongside the ship. And that's where probably the most dangerous part of our job is the getting on board the ship and the getting off the ship when they go out to sea. The smaller vessel, they operate at alongside the vessel in a very kind of precarious place, because you're doing about 10 knots And the seas that affect the small boat don't always affect the large vessel. So it's going up and down, and you have to kind of jump onto a wooden ladder, a wooden rope ladder, and scale up the side of the ship. Unfortunately, pilots lose their lives in that transfer every year. Sadly, this last year, we had two pilots in the Sandy Hook region, which is in New York, New Jersey pilots, that lost their lives in that transfer. Sometimes the pilot boat will hit the ladder and knock the pilot off, and then they'll land either on the pilot boat. Sometimes it's in the transfer itself. Sometimes it's in getting from the ladder to the gangway. It's done in various ways. It's unfortunately taken the lives of many pilots over the years. It, like I said, at least worldwide, one or two pilots a year don't survive the transfer. The worst scenario is when they go through the wheel of the ship.
Yikes. Well, I really appreciate the dangers inherent in your work. I've heard that helicopters are being utilized more often to assist in this. Is that happening?
I don't know if that more often would be the right word. They're used in places where they make sense. You know, they use them in Astoria. That's the one group in the country that I'm aware of that uses them on a regular basis. Down there, it's a perfect case scenario. They have an airport that's right in the middle of the district. It's either they fly out, which takes about less than 10 minutes, or they would take a couple, you know, an hour and a half boat ride and wait between assignments out there. So it really works efficiently down there. It might not be as efficient up here. We've talked about it. There's been some pilots that are you know, promulgating that action. It's very expensive. You know, the $2,500 an hour that a helicopter costs versus what we do now, and then having that what we do now needing to be ready in case there was fog or low visibility would really kick up the price of that. It hasn't been proven as being the most efficient for us. I doubt we go there.
You were recently on a ship yourself. How did you board ship?
It's been by pilot boat. Yeah, we gain access by pilot boat. We depart. It's actually harder to getting off onto the pilot boat because you have to look over your shoulder. Like, it's just like climbing a tree. It's always easier to go up than it is to come down. And so that's the same with a pilot boat. You have to, the people on the boat, they call out how many steps to come down. And then they literally tell you now, and you jump so that you're able to get off on the way, while the boat's at the peak and you're not.
So that's a team effort then, really. You've got people helping you.
We have excellent employees and the pilot boat drivers and the boatmen. Some of them have been there long enough where they've handled over 35,000 boardings and successfully, I might add.
Well, describe the special training that members receive in order to become pilots.
So pilots are, they've been 2 years as a master in some capacity, and sometimes, 1 year if they're of any gross tons license, where they've been a master of a vessel and they've exhibited, you know, a high quality and good skills and a good level of experience. And then they move on to the pilots where they take a test, a very difficult test that's given by the state. The State Board of Pilotage gives a test that you have to qualify for in a written exam. I think it's 100 questions that can be on a lot of different subjects around, you know, the ship handling, anchoring, the rules of the road, a lot of different things that apply to our area. And then after they pass that test at a certain cut score, they take the simulator test where they go through an imaginary sort of waterway filled with peril and how they react and their timeliness to observing the rules of the road and then making course changes that, you know, respect the dangers, the rules of the road, different obstacles that come up. They're observed by other pilots in the room, and then they get a score after that. And then they proceed into the last phase, which is actually being on the ships and doing the ship jobs where they are evaluated. There is another level too, where they have to draw 26 charts by memory, where it's a blank outline of the land, and then they fill in all the aids, shoals, and cable areas, traffic lanes, and things like that from memory. So it's a very difficult process to become a Puget Sound pilot or a pilot in any district for that matter.
How many years does that typically take? Because that is intensive.
Generally people do it in about 2 years where they get their federal endorsement. That's where they draw the charts, the 26 charts, and also do the, it takes about 300 jobs or so before they've done the, all the assignments that are required. You know, you need to go in and out of so many ports, so many ways. And then, so it's about 100 jobs to observe and then be trained and then be a, you're trained for 100, and then in the last phase, you're evaluated for 100. And so if all those go well, and the evaluation form is very extensive, and in that evaluation stage, you're not allowed to get any assistance. It's like you're there on your own. You're just being graded. And so as long as you go through that stage where you're graded and you come out, you know, successfully, then you become a Puget Sound pilot.
Amazing. You have been through all the training as well and are an accomplished ship captain. Tell us a little bit about the path that led you to this work.
You know, I was on a tug in Lake Washington, where I was on a wooden tug as a deckhand, and I was, I knew I loved being on the water and I knew I loved being on the sound. And when I saw this pathway of just being on a tug, that was good enough for me. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. I can be on the water. I can be on this tug. There was a physical element to it. There was the challenge mentally of being able to, you know, work on a 24-hour vessel, you know, around the clock. And we were towing an old wooden scow, with rocks on it. So it was, and then when we got out into the sound, I saw these steel tugs. I thought, oh my God, that's the place to be. And so I eventually found my way onto there with luck. I found my way onto there and going to Alaska and working on the steel tugs. And then when I was in a harbor working on the steel tugs, I met some future pilots. Some of the tugboat captains that I worked with were going on to be a pilots. And so when I asked what that was about, it became clear that that was the place to be, that actually getting on the ships and then going home at night or in the day and driving those. Because we're all really, all Puget Sound pilots are really, we love to drive stuff. And whether it's cars, boats, planes, you know, we just like to be in control of something and driving it. And so we're the ones that were in the tub, you know, playing with the model ships, you know, and toys long after the water cooled off. And not only do we like driving them, we like talking about driving them. So it's a real passion, you know, the different levels and how you maneuver. And, you know, because ship handling is an art. There's a lot of different ways to do it. There's not a certain way to do anything. There's just a lot of different ways to get it done, and how we like to do that efficiently and do it well. That's what we like to talk about, and how we overcome the challenges and how we're able to do it well. That's just something we all share, a passion that we all share.
You've also taken on some leadership roles within the Puget Sound Pilots. Can you tell us about those?
Yeah, I managed the pilot boats for a while, that for 10 years. That was pretty interesting because they were brand new. They came out of the boatyard brand new. And then I was on the board of directors, like you mentioned before. Then I was vice president. And then I was actually for the last 4 years president of our organization. And that was very interesting to hear and learn about the beach side of the business. And we had some things in the legislature that was going on, and we elevated the role of the Puget Sound Pilots in our community in the eyes of the legislature, because like we say, if nothing happened, you know, no catastrophes happened, nobody really knows we're around and what we do. Most of the conversations were around who we are and what we do, and they start off with, what airline do you fly for? And so that's actually good news, because pilots, the best job a pilot can do is not be known that they've even done their job. It's when we leave no trace of having done our job, that's the best possible outcome. There's nothing better than a ship coming and going and they're leaving no evidence or no news, right? The last thing we want to be is in the news.
If you're just joining us, this is KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and I am Marianne Wagner, today's host of Coastal Cafe, and we're speaking with Captain Eric Von Brandenfels with the Puget Sound Pilots. Well, here's an interesting fact. Seattle and Tacoma combined are the nation's third largest container complex, and Puget Sound is home to the third largest concentration of naval vessels in the nation, too. Is it unusual to have so much activity in a region, Eric?
You know, it is a little unusual. We're not number one in anything, but we're like number three in everything. Kind of like you said, we have an incredible high volume of the container traffic, but not number one. We have a lot of cruise traffic. Well, we did have, and we will in the future, but we're not number one there. So yeah, we do a lot of, and that's what makes this a great port to be a pilot in. We have a variety of work. Some ports are just centric to one aspect of shipping or maritime silo. You know, we have container traffic, bulk cargo. We have, like I said, crews. We have loaded oil tankers and empty, you know, oil tankers. We have a lot of different silos where we work. We have car ships that come in and out of Port of Tacoma, and car ships are a real interesting vessel. They're not a real graceful looking ship. They're big box, but they're an interesting ship. They hold over 6,000 cars on a single ship, and the entire ship in the interior smells like a brand new car. And just so that we do a lot of different kind of work, and that's what makes this a great place to be a pilot because of the variety.
Well, Washington State also has ferries crossing Puget Sound east and west more than 500 times a day. And that has to be something unique to our area. Do ferries add an extra challenge for vessels coming into Puget Sound?
You know, they do. We call those the east-west vessels, and we're the north-south vessels. The traffic lanes are usually laid out north-south, and the ferries cross those traffic lanes. And it's incredible that you say that. It's 500 times, that's a lot. And the amount of times that we have to interact with them is probably somewhere double that or whatever. So we really get along well with the Washington State Ferries. A lot of the pilots come from the Washington State Ferries. Historically, that's one of the tugs, the ferries, and the ships that come in and out of Puget Sound are the places where the pilots come from. And there are rules of the road that prescribe, you know, which actions are taken by the vessels that pass. But the actions that we take in regards to the ferries are usually just what works out best for either vessel for the minimum delay or the minimum amount of course change. And the ferries are always really, really, I guess you'd say cooperative with the pilots. And, you know, because we're always, you know, meeting at some point. So they tend to just do what's the safest outcome. Whether or not they have the right of way or not, that's what we always want, is the best possible, safest outcome with the most, the largest crossing angle, or, you know, giving the most room. So it's really been great to have that cooperation with the ferries.
And that's interesting to note that a lot of the future Puget Sound pilots come from the ferry system. That's fascinating. A few years ago, I attended a reception celebrating the 150th year of the Puget Sound Pilots, which tells me that there has long been a need for this service. But vessels plying the waters of Puget Sound must have changed quite a bit during this span of time. Has the job of piloting ships changed much over time as a result of changing ship technology and design?
It really has. It's funny that, you know, in the 4 years that I was in the president's chair, and now I'm back, there's been change there. The ships have gotten bigger just in that 4 year time span. It's very common now to have a ship that's over 1200 feet long, and where the pilot's wheelhouse is almost 200 feet in the air. And the size ships, you know, are just increasing all the time. That's one of the things that's happened. The size of the ships have increased, but the waterways where we take them has not increased generally in size. So we're still challenged with taking these really large ships in these really confined spaces. And so that challenge has gotten even greater. So it's generally not as difficult when there's no wind and good visibility, but when there's wind or the channel is crowded with other ships that are moored, or there's fog, the space that you have to work with is you know, less and therefore are much more challenging. So yes, I think always throughout the history of piloting in Puget Sound, the ship sizes are getting bigger, and you know, the amount of people that live on the shoreline is also more, you know, especially now during COVID times, everybody's home all the time and they're concerned about their beachfront and, you know, whether or not there's wake issues or not, people are on the beaches. You know, we always try and mitigate the threat of the wake and the swell on someone's beach property, especially, you know, during the summertime when there's people on the beach and enjoying the exact shoreline. That's more common now. So it's just something that we have to keep in mind almost all the time now, whereas before it was kind of a summertime weekend concern. Now it's all the time.
So does that mean you're slowing down?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely keeping an eye on that. That's one of the difficult things that we do, because some ships in different configurations, if they're heavier in the stern and lighter in the bow, you know, the wake, you can be on the same ship, but it's trimmed differently. It can put a different wake out. So that's one of the more difficult things to kind of stay out in front of. And so, yeah, we are slowing down a lot more, I would say, lately with the bigger ships.
What is the geographic area that the Puget Sound pilots serve exactly?
You know, I would just say, to make it simple, it's everything east of Port Angeles, of Edith's Hook, of the spit at Edith's Hook, everything east in the state, whether it's all the way to Point Roberts or and down to Olympia, we service that entire area for any foreign ships.
Well, are there pilots serving every port and waterway up and down the entire Pacific coast?
Yes, there's different pilot groups that serve Columbia River, Coos Bay, Grays Harbor in the state has two pilots that work the Grays Harbor ships. San Francisco Bay has a bar pilots that work there. LA, Long Beach, two different groups. And there's also, you know, little ports in between there that have small pilot groups. Our pilot groups consist of around 51 pilots, and it's not uncommon for a group to be around that same size. I think San Francisco might have 56 or somewhere like that.
And where are you based?
We are based generally on the Seattle side in our homes, you know, on the side where we operate out of our homes. That's where we operate, and that's in that district. And then we end up in Port Angeles. We operate out of two hubs, the Port Angeles hub and the Seattle hub. And so we base ourselves out of there.
Well, this is hazardous work. I think you've mentioned that the boarding and the offboarding are the most challenging aspect. Is that true, would you say? What, are there any other aspects of this work?
Definitely. Just the operating around the large industrial waterfront too. You know, we are... just getting to the ships that are in the port, you know, there's a lot of big equipment that run the containers around, or whether you're in a shipyard where they have scrap, or a port facility that has scrap metal or whatever, there's that industrial element that, you know, we're just like a little ant out there trying to get to the ship. But definitely the boarding process is the most difficult and dangerous, and proven that way because of the deaths that happen every year in the pilotage world.
Yeah, the work you do daily is so challenging and also so important. There isn't a lot of room for error and the stakes are high. How do you mentally prepare for such challenging work every day?
You know, the most difficult part of our job is probably managing the fatigue. You know, a lot of the work we do is at night. A lot of the ships like to arrive and depart after the, you know, they like to get to the Seattle ports or Tacoma ports for first light, or, you know, 6 a.m. for the day shift. So a lot of the work we do is at night. And so we get out of our circadian rhythm, but we have good rest rules that give us the ability to recover. You know, one of the things that pilots need to be skilled at is being able to go to sleep in the daytime to be ready for a night assignment. Those are the kind of things that we really kind of try and focus on. And so we have a room at home where we're, you know, off out of the way of everybody, with fans, earplugs, a lot of different white noise elements. And the same with at the pilot station, you know, not a lot of loud work gets done when pilots are resting there in the daytime or nighttime. So we just really focus on getting good rest and keeping track of where we are as far as our rest. And we do a lot of rest and circadian rhythm and fatigue education in our group so that we really are focused on, you know, getting the best out of ourselves. And we also, you know, come from that background in the maritime industry where that's been a part of our whole life is getting sleep and in odd times and catching rest when we can.
It sounds like you have a very rigorous schedule as a pilot. How do you find family balance with such a schedule?
Well, it's great that you asked that question. It's interesting. One of our pilot partners just had a child. She took some time off, you know, which was in our organization, we allow that to happen. And we're actually a great organization for women to come and pilot here and raise a family. She's doing a great job with her husband. They share those responsibilities, as you can imagine most do. And so, this is a great organization to be a part of, to have a family. It is a challenge. It's hard to get your rest, but when isn't it hard to get your rest when you have a young child?
Well, few people living along the coast realize how the pilots are every day on the water, risking their lives to keep our ecosystem safe from oil spills and other chemical spillage. Would you describe the pilots as stewards of our environment?
Yeah, definitely stewards of our environment, and we're supply chain critical, and especially during these COVID times, we've been tasked with maintaining, you know, the pilot's health and the ship, the crew's health by keeping COVID out of the maritime industry, wearing a lot of PPE, and just being focused on, you know, maintaining that, because we don't want to have any ships get COVID from the pilots when they go, and then the ships go off to sea and have endangered the crew members where they couldn't get any medical attention out there once they've left. So we've been very focused on that. And yeah, we are definitely stewards of the environment as well.
Well, thank you, Eric, for giving us an in-depth look at little known but critical service provided to our state by the Puget Sound pilots. It's amazing work and very important. Thank you.
You're welcome, and appreciate the opportunity to explain what we do.
This is Mary Ann Wagner, and you've been listening to Coastal Cafe, a joint production of Washington Sea Grant at the UW College of the Environment and KPTZ 91.9 FM. Washington Sea Grant helps people in marine life thrive by providing research, technical expertise, and education that support the conservation of our ocean and coastlines. I'd like to thank our station manager, Larry Stein, and production engineer, Jared Dufresne. And as always, a special shout out to the band Kooeeks for sharing their music with us at the open and closing of this program. And thank you for listening. Have a good day. Ha,